claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I hope you had a great weekend and spent a lot of time with people you love and care about. There's a lot going on. One of the interesting reports is Democrats are getting uneasy about the repeal of Title 42 immigration restrictions and want Biden to hold off lifting the policy. The reasons ought to be obvious. Not only is he not managing the border, that there's a massive flood, millions coming across a border, giving them lots of benefits that Americans don't enjoy, but now he's going to relieve them of harms that are being inflicted on Americans by not requiring them to satisfy COVID restraints and requirements. I mean, in my opinion, this is such a horror story for the Democrats. But if they couldn't count on stealing elections, this kind of agenda wouldn't have a chance. Listen to what's being reported here. The impending repeal of the Title 42 COVID immigration policy and the attendant expected surge of illegal immigrants attempting to cross a border is appearing to be too much even for Democrats to swallow. Many have joined Republicans in an effort to urge President Biden to delay lifting the Trump-era policy that is planned for next month. The change in policy will result in a massive surge of illegal migrants, according to the Border Patrol. And you know they got it right. Border is out of control right now. Since Biden became president, attempted border crossings have increased dramatically. And there's even a chart to show how much they have surged. Title 42 is a pandemic-era policy begun under Trump, allowing authorities to turn away immigrants based on health grounds. It's exactly that policy the Biden admin is seeking to drop. Senators in tight races, however, are feeling the heat. As a midterm election looms, several Democrats are getting fidgety about Biden lifting the Title 42 order. Among them, Mark Kelly of Arizona, Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada, Chris Coons of Delaware, and Gary Peters of Michigan. Remember, those are all Democrats, and believe me, the fury of the American people over policies like this will be taken out. I expect many past Democrats aren't going to vote for a single Democrat during the midterm, not a single one. Recall the Senate is an even 50-50 split between Democrats and Republicans. Hassan told New Hampshire Television WMUR News, "Our frontline personnel need significant additional numbers, people on the ground at the border. They need more technology. They need access roads, and in some places, they need physical barriers." That sounds like a wall to me. The administration really needs to step up here, develop a plan, and get more resources to the southern border. So maybe Trump wasn't wrong after all. Senator Chris Coons from Biden's home state of Delaware said Sunday on CBS Face the Nation, "In the region where I'm from, we're seeing infections rise. I think Philadelphia, for example, just returned to a mask mandate. So my hope is that that will be reconsidered appropriately. I know there are both Republicans and Democrats calling for a reconsideration, and the administration just announced a plan for how to deal with a possible surge in crossings at the border. But that wouldn't be by relieving Title IV. It would have precisely the opposite effect. Senator Gary Peters from Michigan echoed concerns of other Democrats. Unless we have a well-thought-out plan, I think it is something that should be revisited and perhaps delayed. I'm going to defer judgment on that until I give the administration the opportunity to fully articulate what that plan is. Impending chaos. If Biden gets his way and Title 42 is lifted on May 23rd as scheduled, May 23rd, that's about a month from now, border officials say they will essentially be dealing with an unmanageable number of illegal immigrants at the Texas-Mexico border. The Department of Homeland Security has warned that it's preparing for an influx of as many as 18,000 immigrants per day later this year. That's over 500,000, half a million per month. Half a million per month times 12 months, 6 million a year. Cartels are already preparing to move massive amounts of illegal immigrants through a massive human trafficking network. According to Goliad County Sheriff Roy Boyd, Sheriff Boyd's not just warning Texans, but all Americans about what's about to happen, courtesy of Joe Biden. He added, Biden's border crisis isn't limited to the border. It's heading north to every major city and small town in the United States. Now, think about it. This is a plan to permanently alter the demographics of the United States. Permanently. The Democrats think that it's going to lead to all these people coming in with a free ride to vote Democrat. This is how petrified they are of the political force allied around them, especially in the form of one person, Donald J. Trump. You know, he cleaned their clock in 2016. He did it again in 2020 until they had to manipulate the outcome. They were very good at doing that. They may believe they're invulnerable because they're going to steal the midterm in 2022, just as they stole the election in 2020. But I think Americans are getting pretty pissed off. And we've got this 2000 Mules documentary showing how the Democrats hired all these operatives to stuff the drop boxes massively. In order to be paid, each time they stuffed the drop box, they had to take a selfie of themselves. Well, it turns out Dinesh D'Souza and the producers who put this together have the selfies. They have staggering quantities of information, multiple terabytes. I mean, they just have it, and it's going to be released. So all the lies coming from the Democrats about the integrity of the election and Joe Biden being the most popular candidate in American history are all going to fall apart. They are going to fall apart. Meanwhile, we have a quite good piece about destroying the narrative. Yeah, Mitchell is pointing out they got 4 million minutes of security video. 4 million minutes. Well, if anyone had any doubt about, whether or not the COVID pandemic is real or not, and I would like to think if you're listening here to Revolution Radio, you don't really have any serious doubt about it because so many of us have been reporting so much for so long. A fellow named Jesse Smith has just published, and I've republished on my blog at jamesfetzer.org, Destroying the Narrative. 40 Reasons Why a COVID-19 Pandemic Never Existed, Part 1. Now, this is Part 1, so here you're going to get half of 40, which is 20. Here's how he begins. with a quote from George Soros. Now, remember, this guy, his desires, his lifelong dream is to destroy the United States. He was a backer of Biden and Harris. It was his son who announced that Kamala Harris would be the running mate for Joe Biden. The Democratic Party appears to have been bought lock, stock, and barrel by George Soros. So, what do we hear from George? This is the crisis of my lifetime, even before the pandemic hit. I realized that we were in a revolutionary moment. Well, what would be impossible or even inconceivable in normal times had become not only possible, but probably absolutely necessary. We are not, we will not go back to where we were when the pandemic started. That's pretty certain. In other words, what they call a whole new normal. They wanted to F up our lives. They're doing a hell of a job of it, effing it up. George Soros is as central to all of this monstrous development as any figure in the world. The Rothschild banking empire involved Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, Ted Turner, and a host of other genocidal globalists. But I guarantee you, if you want to line them up for execution after due process of law, of course, by a firing squad, I would put George Soros at the top of the line. Smith writes, "The whole world is under the power of an evil spell. The specters of the past are rapidly converging across the globe and hurling us toward a true prison planet where authoritarian rule is commonplace." None of this would have been possible without state of emergency declaration being implemented in countries worldwide to stop the so-called coronavirus pandemic. Authoritarian governments love emergency powers and executive orders because they provide cover to implement all manner of draconian dictates, essentially destroying free speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of the press, in the name of keeping people safe. What if the pretext for declaring a pandemic and locking down billions was all just a ruse? What if all that's happened over the past 18 months had nothing to do with a global health crisis? What if many of the deaths attributed to COVID-19 could have stemmed from other causes? What if the reason for declaring a pandemic was to destroy the current world system and institute a new normal one world order? There is an abundance of evidence suggesting that the coronavirus pandemic is nothing but a global social engineering project meant to get people used to obeying mandates and dictates from local, state, federal, and even international powers. The following statement from the World Economic Leader Klaus Schwab seems to indicate there's indeed another purpose for the crisis. Quote, "The pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world." This is one of the greatest scumbags in the history of the planet. If it can be proven there was never a real pandemic, then all instituted measures, including lockdowns, masking, social distancing, contact tracing, vaccination, and vaccine passports, are totally unnecessary, unethical, unlawful, and must be stopped immediately. He's got it absolutely right, because it can be proven there was never a real pandemic. Have no doubt about it. There have been thousands of articles written about the devastating repercussions each of these safety measures has wrought against humanity. This two-part article will tie together many facts that, when considered together, will destroy the illusion that humanity ever faced a dire pandemic. The list is in no particular order, and links to source material are included for reference and further research. Much of this investigation could not have been achieved without the work of so many independent journalists and alternative media outlets. Now, let's begin the journey and delve into the first 20 reasons how we know a COVID-19 pandemic never existed. Number one, COVID-19 symptoms are largely indistinguishable from symptoms of other common illnesses. The CDC's official list of COVID symptoms do nothing to differentiate COVID from illnesses such as influenza, the common cold, allergies, and pneumonia. Potentially, millions of people diagnosed with COVID-19 likely had one of these other illnesses instead. Number two, early test kits developed by the CDC were severely flawed. In March of 2020, an article in Business Insider revealed that the CDC test kits could not distinguish between the coronavirus and water. And water. The CDC had to recall over 32,000 kits that had been shipped to the state public health labs. In April, the following month, CDC officials confirmed the test kits sent out to the states in February were tainted with a coronavirus. Yeah, they had them designed that way, just didn't think anyone would catch on. It was determined that sloppy laboratory practices at two of three CDC labs involved in the test creation led to contamination and uninterpretable results. And you think that was accident? Although it said the test did not spread coronavirus, how do we know this for sure given the multitude of other lies that had been told? You think this was only an issue in the U.S.? See, here, 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 linked articles. Number three, the RT-PCR test used to diagnose COVID-19 is fraudulent. The late Nobel Prize-winning inventor Kerry Wallace said that PCR should never be used for medical diagnosis. It was never intended to diagnose illness from viruses, and current versions cannot distinguish between different coronaviruses or other virus types. The test can only detect the presence of genetic material having a variety of origins. Get that. The test can only detect the presence of genetic material having a variety of origins. Positivity levels for COVID-19 depend largely on what cycle threshold tests are set for. Anything above 30 to 35 cycles is likely, virtually certain, to produce false positive results. Dr. Anthony Tony the Rat, as I call him, Fauci, admitted this in an interview in July of 2020. According to the New York Times, most labs set the cycle at 40, meaning the test results are highly likely to give false positive results. The CDC is abandoning the current PCR test as of December 31st of 2021, citing a new test that will facilitate detection and differentiation of SARS-CoV-2 and influenza viruses. This admission implies the current PCR test cannot make these distinctions. The CDC even admitted a positive PCR test result does not necessarily indicate that COVID-19 is a definitive cause of disease and may be other bacterial infections or co-infection with other viruses, again, with multiple links. Number four, results from widespread PCR testing led to an increase in false positive cases, giving the illusion of a pandemic. After death rates were proven to be minimal, the fear-mongering campaign focused on the rise of positive cases resulting from the fraudulent PCR test. Remember Hillary telling us, test, test, test? She was a party to the fraud. Thousands, potentially millions, tested positive through COVID-19, even though they had no symptoms. Remember that scene from a Twilight Zone, imagine a virus so lethal, you have to be tested to know you even have it. Officials in the media were complicit in creating a case dynamic where healthy people were told they were sick because of a positive test. Here, 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 and here. Number five, the Delta and all the other variants are a sham. Absolutely right. The current PCR test cannot differentiate between COVID-2 and the Delta variant, or any variant for that matter. According to the Texas Department of Health and Human Services, Detecting the Delta variant or other variants requires a special type of testing called genomic sequencing. Due to the volume of COVID cases, sequencing is not performed on all viral samples. However, because the Delta variant now accounts for the majority of cases, there's a strong likelihood that a positive test result indicates infection with a Delta variant. According to the Business Insider, you aren't legally allowed to know which variant gave you COVID in the U.S., even if it's Delta. Armed with these facts, how can there be an epidemic of Delta variant infection when the PCR test can't detect it and required genomic sequencing tests aren't being performed and haven't been even federally approved? Finally, the supposed Delta variant is no deadlier than the original SARS-CoV-2 strain, according to Public Health England, from June 18, 2021. The case fatality rate for the Delta variant was 0.1%, about the same rate as the flu. Number six, asymptomatic transmission is a myth. Before the current state of scientific lunacy, you had to actually have symptoms to be diagnosed as being sick from a disease or a virus. The COVID-19 pandemic turned things around 180 degrees. Where you could test positive for the virus but never show any symptoms. In other words, it's an illusion. We are suffering from a mass illusion. A December 2020 study in the Journal of the AMA revealed symptomatic people infect someone else in the house 18% of the time. Asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic only infect someone else 0.7% of the time. The study concluded these findings are consistent with other household studies reporting asymptomatic index cases as having a limited role in household transmission. If it's virtually impossible to contact COVID-19 from someone without symptoms you live with, how is it possible to contract from interacting with asymptomatic people in public places? Because, of course, you have much more exposure over time to someone with whom you're living. A study by Chinese researchers published by the NIH National Center for Biotechnology Information revealed none of 455 individuals exposed to asymptomatic carriers for 4 to 5 days later tested positive for the disease. The study's conclusion states, in summary, all the 455 contacts were excluded from SARS-CoV-2 infection, and we conclude the infectivity of some asymptomatic SARS-CoV-2 carriers might be weak. Actually, they're showing it's non-existent. In June of 2020, Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove, head of the WHO's Emerging Disease and Zoonosis Unit, publicly stated, asymptomatic carriers very rarely transmit the coronavirus. As this admission began to make major news, they quickly backtracked, reassuring everyone that asymptomatic people can spread the virus. So which is true? Perhaps the words of Dr. Anthony Fauci, one of the rare times he's told the truth, will help clear up the illusion. And here, case closed. This was Fauci saying asymptomatic very rarely or ever transmit. Number seven, over 80% of those diagnosed and placed on ventilators died. Last year, Dr. Cameron Kyle Sedell sparked controversy with a viral video stating that patients being put on ventilators were dying at an alarming rate. Data from China and New York City indicated over 80% of those placed on ventilators died. I have dear friends, one of whom died from being put on a ventilator, Robert David Steele. Another, my publisher, Dave Gaheri, survived not just once, but twice from being put on a ventilator. I was astonished. As he was recovering, walking down the hall, nurses would look at him as though they'd seen a ghost. They did not believe he would survive. A journal of the AMA study from April of 2020 revealed that 88% of New Yorkers placed on a ventilator did not survive. That means they died. These examples prove it was medical malpractice that killed thousands of people, not COVID-19. Number 9, nursing homes and long-term care facilities comprised a large portion of COVID-19 deaths worldwide. Many of the deaths that created the initial pandemic were early patients in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. They knew they would be vulnerable, so if they knocked off a whole bunch, it would create the illusion of a pandemic. In June of 2020, USA Today documented 40,600 deaths among nursing home residents and believed the number to be an undercount. The Atlantic corroborated this toll and also pointed out that state and federal officials seem to be doing little to protect the elderly from further devastation. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo should have been held personally responsible for many of these deaths after issuing an executive order allowing COVID-19 positive and infectious patients to be moved into nursing homes for treatment. He did this deliberately. Cuomo was part of the plot. A May 2020 Guardian article revealed that 90% of the 3,700 who have died from coronavirus in Sweden were over 70. Half were living in care homes, and in Belgium, more than half of coronavirus deaths were those in care homes. Spain and Italy had similar numbers. So how many elderly truly died from COVID and not some other underlying cause like cancer, or even worse, how many may have been deliberately killed? A damning NHS document revealed many nursing and care facility patients were potentially given a fatal dose of midazolam, a drug used for sedative therapy in critical ill patients. Were the elderly sacrificed to spark fear and create the illusion that death was imminent if one contracted COVID-19? There's not room for a lot of serious doubt about it. Right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We're reviewing Destroying the Narrative, 40 Reasons Why COVID-19 Pandemic Never Existed, Part 1, the first 20. You can find this published on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. We're down to number 9 of the first 20. Some COVID-19 patients were denied life-saving medical treatments. Imagine. And when you think that the Hippocratic Oath says, first, do no harm, what has happened to the medical profession in the United States? What has happened to the hospitals? What has happened to the doctors? It appears they've all been bought and paid for. This is disgusting as it gets. New York City hospitals, at one time epicenter of the pandemic, issued a do not resuscitate order for dying COVID patients. Just as insidious, these do not resuscitate orders were also being recommended for those with disabilities. Being denied life-saving treatment goes against a Hippocratic Oath. See, here, 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 and here. Number 10. Doctors and hospitals were paid more to diagnose patients as having COVID-19. The corruption in our healthcare system cannot be overstated. According to State Senator Dr. Scott Jensen of Minnesota, hospitals were given $13,000 for every COVID diagnosis, up from $5,000 for a typical lump sum payment, and $39,000 for every patient using a ventilator by the NIH. Even a USA Today fact check article verified this to be true. It's easily verifiable because the CARES Act authorized increased Medicare payments to hospitals treating COVID patients. Dr. Janssen, who would not go along with the scam, was threatened with having his medical license revoked for exposing the truth. In August of 2020, former CDC Director Robert Redfield also admitted hospitals had a monetary incentive to overcount coronavirus deaths. This is just a diabolical Rothschild, you know. This is just disgusting beyond belief. Number 11, the CDC dishonestly mixed in mortality data from pneumonia, influenza, and COVID to tally death rates. This overt data manipulation does not present an accurate picture of the death rate for COVID-19 alone. Further evidence can be found in the fact that flu virtually disappeared. How is that possible? According to a Healthliner report, the flu has resulted in 3 million to 49 million illnesses each year in the U.S. since 2010, each year on the average. 5 to 20% of the U.S. population gets a flu. Creating a new category allowed the CDC to hide the flu and relabel it as COVID-19. We've reported this many times. John Rappaport and Edward Henry have been very, very good on this. Number 12, COVID-19 death numbers were inflated. A CDC memo dated March 24th, 2020, from Stephen Schwartz, Ph.D. and director of the Division of Vital Statistics, advised coroners and medical examiners to report COVID-19 fatalities for those who did not receive a positive test result, as long as it was assumed it caused or contributed to this. As long as it was assumed. Now we're getting down to just making this shit up. Montana physician Dr. Annie Buchlek said, the CDC counts both true COVID cases and speculative guesses at COVID the same. They call it death by COVID. They automatically overestimate the real death numbers by their own admission. Dr. Deborah Burks stated, if someone died after being tested positive for COVID, the death would be counted as COVID even if they died from other causes, like a motorcycle accident, a car crash, struck by lightning. A report showed up to 88% of Italy's alleged COVID deaths could have been misattributed. In April of 2020, CDC began counting coronavirus cases and deaths not confirmed by lab testing, allowing the numbers to be falsely inflated. A U.S. News and World Report article stated as a result of the change in guidance from the CDC, there was already a big rise in New York City. Officials started counting people who had never tested positive for the coronavirus. That caused the city's death count to jump by more than 3,700 on Tuesday. COVID-19 deaths have been greatly exaggerated from the outset. The CDC has admitted people who have died from COVID have an average of 4 comorbidities, including conditions such as heart failure, diabetes, and cancer. Doesn't make sense that one or a combination of these other health conditions led to their death. Here's a report about it. Comorbidities and other conditions, table 3. For over 5% of these deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned on the death certificate. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID, on the average, there were 4.0 additional conditions or causes per death. The CDC data also reveals that only over 5% of deaths recorded on official death certificates were attributed solely to COVID-19 as of September 5th of 2021. This means around 95% of recorded deaths were not from COVID-19. I repeat, around 90%, 95% of recorded deaths were not from COVID-19. They were recorded as COVID, but they were in fact not from COVID. See, here, and here. He does a great job of documenting every claim he makes. Project Veritas exposed the accounts of several directors and workers at New York funeral homes who admitted COVID-19 was being written on their death certificate when it was not the true cause of death for political and monetary reasons. The real death rate published by the CT back in May of 2020 is 0.004. That's 0.004%. This indicates the survival rate is 99.96, according to the current best estimate at the time. The breakdown is as follows. Age 0 to 49, 0.005%. 50 to 64, 0.002%. 65 over, 0.013%. Overall, 0.004%. That's not quite right. The overall survival rate jumped to 99.98, as indicated in the September 10 version of the data. The current best estimate for death rates in all ages is described as really virtually minuscule. 0 to 19, 3 in 100,000. 20 to 49, 2 in 10,000. 50 to 69, 5 in 1,000. Over 70, 54 in 1,000. Overall, 2 in 100. That can't be right. These last overall numbers somehow are funny. Meanwhile, number 13, excess deaths in 2020 were beyond those explainable by COVID-19. In a March 2021 study, JAMA, that's of course a journal of the AMA, concluded the provisional leading cause of death rankings for 2020 indicated that COVID was the third leading cause of death behind heart disease and cancer. So, even with all the hype and hoopla about a pandemic, more people died from heart disease and cancer, as is typical of any other year. In an article from the British Medical Journal, Dr. John Ioannidis indicated there were several other causes for excess death, stating, under lockdown conditions, many patients with acute treatable conditions, such as coronary syndromes, avoid seeking care. This disruption may be seen in the excess deaths accruing so far in the COVID lockdown. Patients with cancer whose treatment is delayed have worse outcomes. When patients avoid hospitals, many health systems suffer financially, further personnel and cut services. COVID overwhelmed a few dozen hospitals, but COVID countermeasures have already jeopardized thousands of them. My own clinic right here in my own little community still insists you have to wear a mask. How bad is that, for God's sake? We know the masks do no goddamn good. They're very harmful. I was going to cancel an appointment I had anyway, but I added on that masks are harmful, contradicting the Hippocratic Oath first, do no harm. The Center for Evidence-Based Medicine came to the conclusion the total amount of excess mortality attributed to COVID will also depend on the age structure of the population. Countries with age structures weighted toward an older population will experience higher mortality than a country with an age structure weighted toward a younger. In June of 2020, a study revealed that nearly one-third of excess deaths in early stages of the pandemic were linked to causes other than COVID-19. Study author Dr. Stephen Wolf stated, people who never had the virus may have died from other causes because of the spillover effects of the pandemic, such as delayed medical care, economic hardship, or emotional distress. Official figures show there were 2,703 excess deaths across England and Wales as of September 2020. But coronavirus was not even in the top 10 leading causes of fatality. The leading cause of death in September for both countries was dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Finally, an article published on November 22nd by Johns Hopkins newsletter, but deleted a few days later, I reported on this at the time, revealed startling information about COVID death rates, including there is no evidence COVID created any excess death. Total death numbers are not above normal. The total decrease in deaths by other causes almost exactly equals the increase in death by COVID. Deaths due to heart disease, respiratory disease, influenza, pneumonia may instead be recategorized as being due to COVID. The CDC classified all deaths that are related to COVID simply as COVID deaths. Even patients dying from underlying diseases but are infected with COVID count as COVID deaths. The original article was retracted with an editor's note on November 22nd, but made available by PDF. This was brilliant work. It slipped through the crack. Truth for a change. Truth, just a sliver of truth. Number 14. In 2009, the corrupt World Health Organization changed the definition of a pandemic. The WHO altered the pandemic definition by deleting severity of illness and focusing on numbers of cases rather than number of deaths. Some whose side is responsible for creating pandemic policies were being paid by the very pharmaceutical companies creating the vaccines and antivirals that would be used if the pandemic were declared. The 2009 pandemic definition: an influenza pandemic occurs when a new influenza virus appears against which the human population has no immunity, resulting in several simultaneous epidemics worldwide with enormous numbers of deaths and illness. That was the old definition before they refined it. Number 15, WHO deleted references to naturally acquired immunity from its website. Can you imagine? The World Health Organization deleted references to naturally acquired immunity? What's known as a basic staple in virology, the definition of herd immunity, also called naturally acquired immunity, was completely redefined by the World Health Organization in a matter of months. No longer did natural immunity mean a person could be protected from a viral infection because of previous exposure or vaccination. The new definition only emphasized protection. The new definition served to benefit vaccine makers and pigeonhole humanity into seeking protection from viruses only. What is herd immunity? This is the old definition. It happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection, meaning prior exposure. Herd immunity now is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. See, you don't even have a natural ability to protect yourself. Number 16, WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the person who declared a worldwide pandemic on March 11, 2020, is not even an MD. He's not even a medical doctor. Number 17, WHO, CDC, many public health officials confirm COVID-19 is no more dangerous than the flu. During a special session of the WHO's 34-member executive board on October 5th of 2020, WHO officials inadvertently revealed 10% of the world population have been infected with coronavirus. This totaled about 780 million cases. At the time, the global death toll attributed to COVID was 1,061,539, which would be a fatality rate of 0.14% or 14 one-hundredths, about the same rate as seasonal flu. On January 31st, 2020, Time published an article entitled Want to protect yourself from coronavirus? Do the same things you do every winter, in which the author wrote, while 2019 COVID has never been seen before, it's part of a family of viruses well known both to doctors and the public. The common cold, for example, can be caused by certain coronaviruses. And while influenza is not a coronavirus, it isn't so different from COVID either. The things we take for granted actually do work. It doesn't matter what the virus is. The routine things work. On February 1st of 2020, USA Today published an article entitled, Coronavirus is Scary, but the Flu is Deadlier and Even More Widespread. which the author stated. So far, there have been an estimated 19 million cases of the flu, 180,000 hospitalization, and 10,000 deaths in the USA this influenza season, including 68 children. Dr. Anthony Fauci and former CDC Director Robert Redfield stated, the overall clinical consequences of COVID may ultimately be more akin to those of a severe seasonal influenza, which has a case rate of approximately a tenth of a percent, or a pandemic influenza similar to those of 1957 and 1968, rather than a disease similar to SARS or MERS, which have had case fatality rates of 9 to 10% and 36%. 9 to 10% are much, and 36% are overwhelmingly larger than one-tenth of a percent. As early as March of 2020, Public Health England downgraded COVID-19 from a high-consequence infectious disease. This is significant because according to the definition of a high-consequence infectious disease, COVID-19 was not actually infectious, did not have a high case rate fatality, or require enhanced individual population and system response to ensure it was managed efficiently, effectively, and safely. During a press conference on April 30, 2020, British Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty stated, the great majority of people will not die from this. Of those who get symptoms, a vast majority, probably 80%, will have a mild or moderate disease. Might be bad enough to have them go to bed for a few days, not bad enough to have them go to the doctor. One could argue these statements were made early on before the fatality rate was properly understood. However, the death rate has remained consistent throughout the entire pandemic, proving it's always been more like flu than anything else. 18. Predictions based on false pandemic models led to lockdowns and harsh measures to stop the spread of the virus. On March 16, 2020, the Bill Gates-funded Imperial College of London model predicted 2 million U.S. deaths, 510 in the U.K. In May of 2020, the prediction went up in smoke as the mathematical code was deemed shit code. Neil Ferguson, the author of the code report, resigned his position as it was revealed. He had violated the lockdown by having his married lover visit his home. That doesn't sound like social distancing to me. Governments around the world, including the U.S., use a fake computer model to justify lockdowns that cause extreme economic hardship, depression, unemployment, unintended negative medical consequences, suicide, domestic violence, a host of others, all of which were predictable. Number 19, Deborah Birx, former White House coronavirus response coordinator, backed another fraudulent coronavirus model. The Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation model, also funded by Bill Gates, surprise, surprise, do you see a pattern here? Used data from New York and New Jersey, where some of the heaviest concentrations of cases were occurring, and applied it to the rest of the U.S. In other words, this was illegitimately extrapolating from a sample to a population without considering the properties that were different between the sample and the population at large, creating a completely false and unrealistic outcome. The prediction was used to further instill fear that death tolls and hospitalization would drastically rise, further justifying the continuation of lockdowns. The same NIHE predicted that up to 2,800 daily deaths within 11 days and a final death toll as high as 75,000 would occur if Sweden did not enact strict social distancing measures. For Sweden, the daily death peak was actually 75% lower than the baseline prediction, 96% lower than the worst case prediction, 20. The SARS-CoV-2 virus has never been isolated, only sequenced by a computer. No government or health agency has proved SARS-CoV exists. FOIA requests from the CDC reveal this to be true. Request number 21-01075-FOIA. Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Thomas Cowen, and Sally Fallon Morrell have gone on record saying the COVID virus has never been isolated or purified. As a result, No confirmation of the virus' existence can be found. See also here, 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 and here. It's a global scheme. We have been had. There's no doubt there was sickness and death occurring throughout the past 18 months that seemed to defy the norm. But can all of it be attributed to a virus that, in the eyes of many scientists and medical professionals, cannot be even proven to exist? The answer to that is obviously no. This has all been bullshit, complete and total bullshit from the beginning. And we are paying an unbelievable price, for this. Completely disgusting. It's available on my blog at jamesfetcher.org. Available on my blog at jamesfetcher.org. This would be a good one to share with everyone you care about. But mind you, be prepared to be rebuffed. There's a very large percentage of the population whose mind is made up. They practice the method of tenacity. Once they hold a belief, they'll never give it up, regardless of the evidence. They'll never give it up, regardless of the evidence. Very strange, very strange. I've just been notified of a false attribution to an article published on my blog, where I published a number of articles, this one at the suggestion of Joaquin Hagopian, about 107's narrative and about, you know, the Q phenomenon. This is not my article. It was one I published at his request, but it's been attributed to me and claiming I am a former Marine Corps and CIA officer. This is just who is close to the late former Marine officer in CIA, and I believe they're talking about Robert David Steele. Both supported Juan Sabin's narrative when it centered on Trump being reseated by military white hats who had the true vote count and insurrection authority. But as the above article posted to Fetcher's wives attest, he sits falling off the trust the plan bandwagon. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. We'll be right back after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Are you a awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, how fortuitous that I checked my email during the break, and I have a very nice note from John Remington Graham, who's a retired professor of law, with whom I participated in an amicus brief on behalf of Zohar Sarinov with two others, also American citizens, because the proof that Zohar was innocent was blatant and overwhelming, to wit, that the backpacks did not match. Very parallel to Johnny Cochran. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. If the backpacks don't match, he didn't do it. What we have in the video of the Sarinov brothers at the marathon, which I must tell you was photoshopped in, they were not actually there, shows Tamerlan more in the distance with a very large, baggy, dark-colored backpack. Large. Then in the foreground, we have Zohar with a silver-covered backpack. Very different, both of them, from the rather compact black nylon backpacks with a white square sewn on them that were used to carry the explosives for the bombing, which, as I've explained many times, and as you hear in relation to the book, and nobody died in Boston either, were puff bombs. They weren't powerful enough to have killed anyone unless you were sitting right on top of it. This was a theatrical event. And I say that with a certain degree of authority as a former artillery officer in the U.S. Marine Corps. This was totally fraudulent. So I know Jack Graham very well. He's a terrific guy, very thoughtful. In the meanwhile, I shared this very narrative, this very story we've just been reviewing, destroying the narrative, 40 reasons why COVID-19 pandemic never existed. Now, Jack, mind you, has had quite a diverse experience in the law, mostly in Minnesota. He was a defense attorney. He was a prosecutor. He had many roles. Here's what he writes. Jim, you and I are willing to take these 20 or more bits and pieces of circumstantial evidence as reasonable proof of a conspiracy promoting a fake pandemic to promote one world government banking and currency run from behind the scenes by the likes of Gates and Soros, because we have learned from general experience in life that conspiracy is a basic fact of life. And so we are willing to believe that characteristic patterns of human behavior indicate concert, meaning cooperation, coordination among men. We can take the suspicious circumstances surrounding the death of Lincoln or the death of Kennedy or the facts surrounding the events of 9/11 or the so-called pandemic of COVID-19, then effortlessly conclude that these groups of facts, even if incomplete, point to conspiracy, not mere stupidity. But unless we're willing to believe in conspiracy from general experience in life, we shall not draw abductive inferences to conspiracy and may even resist such inferences as too fantastic to be credible. Others will point fingers at us as paranoid, and we shall point fingers at them as naive because of what we have learned from general experience in life. I am sure they are naive and we are right because I have witnessed so many stupid or hateful plots in life in more than 50 years in the practice of law. Willingness to believe in conspiracy from general experience in life seems to be the key. Not necessarily Newton's rules for ascertaining cause in nature at the beginning of the third book of the Principia. It is not the method of reasoning so much as willingness to believe from general experience in life. That's a truly fascinating observation. And, you know, why are so many in the face of such powerful and overwhelming evidence unwilling to accept the conclusions that are so clearly supported thereby? Notice, when he talks about an abductive inference, we're comparing two different hypotheses, that the pandemic is real or that the pandemic is fake. And the way you apply abductive reasoning is by, if you were to assume the pandemic is real, then what is the probability of, in this instance, those 20 forms of data, those 20 data points, that assemblage of evidence being true if the pandemic were real, versus what would be the probability of all that evidence to be the case if the pandemic were false? I think there's really little room for doubt here that if the pandemic were real, the evidence we're looking at, you know, the symptoms indistinguishable, the test hits were severely flawed, the diagnosis using PCR is fraudulent, increase in false cases and the whole rest. If it were real, the probability of those outcomes would be extremely low. In fact, I would go so far as to say essentially zero. Now, zero doesn't mean it couldn't occur. Zero as a frequency means it's incredibly unlikely to occur. I use a different term for what's actually impossible, namely null. I'm not declaring that all those symptoms couldn't show up, meaning all the false results and everything, if it were real. I'm simply saying it has a zero statistical probability. On the other hand, if it's fake, then the probability of all these signs goes to virtually one. So I would suggest, and this happens in many different cases when we apply abductive reasoning, what would be the probability of the evidence we have available on the two different hypotheses if they were true respectively? That is a measure of what is known as likelihoods. And then when you compare the likelihoods and hypothesis with a higher likelihood is preferable to an hypothesis with a lower likelihood. That's a matter of preferability. And where, when the evidence has settled down and all points in the same direction, then we're entitled to accept the most likely hypothesis as true, but in the tentative, infallible fashion of science. Tentative in the sense that newly acquired evidence, data, or alternative hypotheses may cause us to revise our conclusions, reject hypotheses we previously accepted, accept hypotheses we previously rejected, and leave others in suspense. And fallible in the sense that even the best supported hypothesis may ultimately turn out to be false. He mentions Newton here. This is a marvelous illustration, because for 200 years, Newton's laws were thought to apply everywhere in the universe, absolutely. Every event that occurred in the universe was occurring at the same time as, or earlier than, or later than any other event in the universe. What Einstein discovered in his theory of relativity is that these temporal relations are relative to a frame of reference. It depends on roughly the platform relative to which you are observing these events as to even the temporal sequence among what takes place during the course of the world. So this is just it turned out that the greatest paradigm of scientific knowledge in the history of science, classical Newtonian physics, once thought to be absolute and immutable, applying in every aspect of space and time, turned out to be a special limiting case of general relativity theory, for which for distances that are relatively small and times that are, not great, it applies with a high degree of precision, high enough you could not tell the difference. But for distances that are astronomical and speeds that are very high, the situation changes. This is what Einstein taught us, and it's just a marvelous illustration to have here. I just mentioned in passing, too, that I'm continuing with my course on critical thinking and scientific reasoning, and we will be talking about abductive inference there in 3 weeks. 3 weeks hence, we'll be talking about the very principles I've just been enumerating here in a thumbnail sketch, and how they apply to alternative conspiracy theories, theories that posit the existence of a conspiracy. Well, here's another example that requires analysis. Oil depots in Russia blow up as Blinken and Austin visit Zelensky in Kiev to tout U.S. weapons shipments. Now, remember, Blinken is our Secretary of State. Austin is our Secretary of Defense. Get this. I find this extremely troubling, by the way. Two oil storage facilities around 150 kilometers into Russia from Ukraine's border went up in flames early Monday morning, just hours after U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev to tout some $73 million in new U.S. weapons shipment and military aid. Let me just say, by the way, Putin's going to get very tired of this very fast. Here's a tweet from Christopher Miller. Ukraine's President Zelensky has published photos of himself with U.S. Secretary Blinken and Secretary Austin in Kiev Sunday and said their visit at this crucial moment for the Ukrainian state is very valuable and important. Here's another. Blinken and Austin delivered news to Zelensky of more U.S. military aid, the reopening of the U.S. embassy in Kiev, and finally a new U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Bridget Brink, the ambassador to Slovakia. Here's another. Breaking. Large explosion reported at a large Russian military base in Bryansk, Russia, amidst reported strikes by Ukrainian forces. Reported strikes follow visit by U.S. Secretary of State William Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin from Moshe Schwartz. The moment of the explosion at the fuel facility in Barents, we got photographs of it. A large fire at an oil depot in Barentsk. More about it. City of Barentsk. Ukrainian saboteurs in action. Again, the moment when one explosion became two tonight in the Russian city of Barents bordering Ukraine. High time for some of these explosions to take place in Russia. Ukraine can't take them all alone. Time for Russia to start pulling back. Barents this morning. Russian state TV on the explosion in Barents first was a civilian facility with about 10,000 tons of fuel. Second fire was 10 to 15 minutes later at a military depot with around 5,000 tons of fuel. So first was 10,000, the second 5,000. No word on cause or casualties. Did America sign off on these illegal strikes, on these alleged strikes? Did they feed Ukraine the intelligence? Was this a deliberate provocation by the U.S.? Or did the Ukrainian military stage it, try to draw the U.S. even further into the war? From Russia Today, which, by the way, is a far more reliable source of news about these developments than anything you'll find in the U.S. anywhere. Oil depot on fire in Russian region bordering Ukraine. From RT. A fire broke out Monday morning at an oil depot in Barentsk, a large Russian city around 150 kilometers from Ukraine and 370 southwest of Moscow. The blaze occurred at a premises operated by Transneft Druzhba JSC and at another location, officials told RIA Novosti. No casualties have been reported. There's no threat to residential buildings. The Ministry of Emergency Situation is advised. The evacuation of population is not planned. According to preliminary information, there were no victims. The press service stated, according to TASS, which is, of course, the Russian news service, local residents have reported that explosions were heard and sirens are audible in social media videos. Another fire was recorded in the Fokinsky district of the city, the causes of which have not yet been established. Moscow Daily Common Salt has reported Barentsk is home to over 400,000 people and is an important regional hub. Russia responded by carrying out strikes at least five Ukrainian railway stations in central and western Ukraine with a goal of trying to cut off U.S. weapon shipments. Russia reportedly struck at least five Ukrainian railroad stations in central and western Ukraine this morning from Rubli. A railroad state junction in the Kharkiv region has been blown up. Russian missile strikes destroyed the Krasnoye railway station coming from the Eurasianist. The Asian Times reported, U.S. involvement goes deeper than arms sales and intelligence sharing. A Pentagon official requested anonymity told me it's likely we have a limited footprint on the ground in Ukraine, but under Title 50, not Title 10, meaning U.S. intelligence operatives and paramilitaries, but not regular military. Bruce Fine, a constitutional expert and former associate attorney general in the Ronald Reagan administration, told me that in his view, the United States and several NATO members have become co-belligerents with Ukraine against Russia by systematic and massive assistance to its military forces to defeat Russia. Mind you, think about it. The U.S. and NATO members have already become co-belligerents. That means we are legally at war with Russia. That means we are legally targets of retaliation by Russia because we are co-belligerents with Ukraine against Russia. Believe me, this is non-trivial. According to Fine, the U.S. and its NATO allies are now vulnerable to attack by an enemy belligerent, meaning Russia, because of their systematic or substantial violations of a neutral's duties of impartiality and non-participation in the conflict. Neutrality, continued Fine, is violated by permitting a belligerent to violate its territorial integrity, as Belarus and Russia have done to Ukraine, or by supplying warships, arms, ammunition, military provisions, or other war materials directly or indirectly, or supplying military advisors to a belligerent, as the U.S. has done under the Declare War Clause of the Constitution. Co-belligerency, which displaces the status of the United States as neutral, requires a declaration of war by Congress, said Fine. But instead of fulfilling its constitutional duties, Congress has been aggressively pushing the administration to deepen its involvement in what is clearly now a U.S.-Russian proxy war. On March 2nd, the U.S. House of Representatives voted 425-3 in favor of a non-binding resolution supporting the people of Ukraine. The following week, on March 10th, the House overwhelmingly voted to send $14 billion in military funding to Ukraine as part of an omnibus spending package. And on April 7th, the U.S. Senate passed Republican Senator John Cornyn's Ukraine Democracy Defense Lend-Lease Act of 2022, which temporarily waived certain requirements related to the president's authority to lend or lease defense articles if the defense articles are intended for Ukraine's government and necessary to protect civilians in Ukraine from Russian military invasion. In the end, Congress and the Biden administration are wading into dangerous waters. Fine warns that the U.S. has employed the concept of co-belligerency to target for extermination any group or individual who provides material support to Al-Qaeda or ISIS, and there is a real risk Russia may take a page out of America's playbook. Something tells me Blinken et al. Aren't going to like it when the Hamas, Houthis, and others start launching attacks in Israel and Saudi Arabia with the latest in Russian high-tech weaponry. I cannot begin to tell you. A commentator on my blog will, too, just put up the following. A great report from Fulfer this morning. Not his usual hopium, but far more realistic. Here's a taste. He also has some noteworthy videos in the link. The Anglo-Saxon nations used to have the respect of the world because they stood for democracy, human rights, competent economic management, etc. I'll never forget when I asked a former head of MI6, "We used to be the good guys, what happened?" His answer was, "The Khazarian Mafia." This is because, like a caterpillar has been infected by a parasitic wasp, the governments of these countries have been taken over by Satan-worshipping Khazarian gangsters. So politicians and military of the West were redirected against the interests of their own people to a project to turn the entire planet into a giant animal farm. This was to be run by Khazarian gangsters out of their ancient homeland, the place we now know of as Ukraine. The Khazarian Mafia took over the governments of most Western countries through a process of murder, bribery, blackmail, and lies. This was directed at the very tip-top of the elite. Understanding the problem lies at the tip-top is also the key to overthrowing the Khazarian Mafia, just like a pimple. If you squeeze it from the bottom up, the pus comes out at the top. I wish I could give you more cheerful news, but the United States has gone over the edge here. And this is really, really serious. Really, really serious. So Bruce Fine is giving us a totally objective report. I'm very, very impressed. He's laid it out so very, very clearly. And just in case anyone missed these key passages, let me reiterate. Because, frankly, this may mean that your life expectancy has been dramatically reduced by the Biden administration participating as a co-belligerent. Bruce Fine, a constitutional expert and former associate attorney general in the Ronald Reagan administration, told me this week that, in his view, the United States and several NATO members have become co-belligerents with Ukraine against Russia by systematic and massive assistance to its military forces to defeat Russia. According to Fon, the U.S. and its NATO allies are now vulnerable to attack by an enemy belligerent, meaning Russia, because of their systematic and substantial violations of a neutral's duties of impartiality and non-participation in the conflict. Neutrality, continued Fon, is violated by permitting a belligerent to violate its territorial integrity, as Belarus and Russia have done to Ukraine, or by supplying warships, arms, ammunition, military provisions, or other war materials, directly or indirectly, or by supplying military advisors to a belligerent, as the U.S. has done. Under the Declare War Clause of the Constitution, co-belligerency, which displaces the status of the United States as neutral, requires a declaration of war by Congress. But instead of fulfilling its constitutional duties, Congress has been aggressively pushing the administration to deepen its involvement in what is clearly now a U.S.-Russian proxy war. In the end, Congress and the Biden administration are wading into dangerous waters. Fine warns the U.S. has employed the concept of co-belligerency to target for extermination any group or individual who provides material support to Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And there's a real risk that Russia may take a page out of America's playbook. Something tells me Blinken et al. Aren't going to like it when Hamas, Houthis, and others start launching attacks in Israel and Saudi Arabia with the latest in Russian high-tech weaponry, where I've been explained Russia has the best military weapons in the world. In the world. We will take calls after the break here. The number, of course, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. These situations are about as disturbing. These developments are about as disturbing as they get. I mean, you know, figuring out that the COVID is a fraud, but they're still moving forward with it. They're still being aggressive. They're still talking about getting the vax, getting boosters, and all the other happy horseshit. But what's going on here in Ukraine, blowing up these oil depots, the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense visiting Zelensky in Kiev to tout U.S. weapons shipments, that's very serious shit, my friends. Very serious shit. We'll be right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
Yeah.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer inviting calls, the number 540-352-4452. Mitchell, I'm always glad to get your opinions and engagement on these issues. I'm afraid the United States has gone too far in Ukraine, that these zealots who are anti-Russian are not being respectful of the bona fide national security interests of the Russian nation, and that they are provoking a war that is going to be catastrophic and the outcome of which is not going to be welcomed by the Western nations or especially their populations who have been betrayed by their own governments. Your thoughts?
Well, how can you negotiate or deal with a corrupt United States government? I think that's the real answer here that nobody really wants to say out loud is that, you know, the Russians were in negotiations with the West and the U.S. in particular about this move, this drive to the East not only by NATO, but by using cultural and social revolutions and then installing their own puppet governments. The Russians asked the United States to stop that. I'm pretty sure, you know, that should be in the, you know, in the recollection of most people late last year. That is, there were negotiations that were supposedly going on. And who did the United States send to negotiate, Jim? Do you know?
Somewhat totally inappropriate. I have no doubt about that. Tell me.
Victoria Nuland.
Yeah. It would have to be, wouldn't it? Of course it would be Victoria Nuland.
And
she who had engineered the coup in 2014 using $5 billion of American taxpayer money. It's just disgusting beyond words.
And in the middle of these negotiations, quote unquote, the United States of America attempted another engineered coup in Kazakhstan. That was in early January of this year.
Now we just think we can go in and take over anyone's country we like, don't we? I mean, the arrogance of the United States is simply appalling. Appalling.
You know, in the middle of, you know, diplomatic negotiations. And, you know, now it's this question of, well, Putin doesn't want to negotiate. He doesn't want to talk. He's, you know, it's over, you know, he's done talking. And, you know, the truth is, if you look at what the United States did, you know, they're essentially trying to draw Russia into a long drawn out war like a Vietnam in an attempt to weaken Russia. And they're willing to sacrifice every Ukrainian to do it. The thing is, the Russians won't be willing to sacrifice, continually sacrifice Russians to do it. So we asked for it and we got it. And, you know, that's what's going on in Ukraine, and it is escalating. I don't know if you're aware, but the United States is now going to send tanks to Poland. So then Poland can send them in to Ukraine. It's that obvious. And they're from stateside. They're actually shipping them over, by the way.
Well, Russia won't take that. You know, I mean, they won't stand for that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
If you're looking at the entire implosion of the Democrat Party on multiple fronts, okay, not only the political front with Joe Biden as president and the complete failures that we've seen since he came into office, but the Hunter Biden laptop, that's going to become larger news as we move forward. And of course, we also have, you know, John Durham, and, you know, we have, basically the Hillary Clinton campaign, the Democrat National Committee, Perkins Coie Law Firm, Fusion GPS, and, there's another one, Rodney Jaffe, maybe, all intend to plead the fifth, or have stated they intend to plead the fifth, or already have, in the ongoing investigation into the criminal conspiracy. It is a criminal conspiracy against Donald J. Trump's campaign. And remember, this is only one piece of the cells that are involved here. In fact, some of the news that's coming out now is there is Christopher Steele. And how they're originally believed that Christopher Steele was going to be, the one to roll out the Alpha Bank accusations. But he evidently wasn't up to it, or they didn't want to do it that way, but it ended up with Michael Sussman, you know, attempting to contact not only the FBI, but the CIA. Hey, we have a caller here from 641.
Okay, caller area from 614. Just give us your first name and your state and join the conversation. Welcome.
Hello. Is it me? It's 641.
Yes, it is you. Speak up.
Yeah, okay. All right. Can I bring some sanity to all this a little bit? The communist or the other side, the left, whatever you want to call them, they like to use what they call thesis, antithesis, and synthesis in all things. Their number one goal is to preclude the possibility of balance in all things. They bring, whether it's one, if you know, they're willing to go to the right with the extreme right for imbalance, or they're willing to go to the extreme left to unbalance. It doesn't matter to them. Whichever way they go, they know that the key to their continued operation is to throw everything into an imbalance, which creates chaos, right? This is how they operate, is off of chaos. And so the reason I bring that up, I had a friend one time. He said this to me. He says, I believe nothing I see, I mean, nothing I hear, and only half of what I see. And, of course, I've changed that for myself. And I say today, I believe nothing I hear and nothing I see, because it's kind of gotten to that point to where you really can't believe anything. You know, when it's coming from either, I didn't matter if it's from government or some corporation or whatever, or some organization, it doesn't matter. You really can't trust anything you hear or see from any of those people, because they have agendas. And most we know are all in bed with the globalists playing their game. And so if they are, well, then that means they're going to be playing using the communist philosophy in all things. So I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. There's a man, I forgot his name, his last name's Anderson, I think. He did a study on the JFK assassination since about 1970. And he accidentally tripped on to information from the Dallas Museum there. There was a lady there that turned him on to some information that he didn't have and wasn't aware of. And that carried him on a long, several year long, travel to do the investigation in a different way. He was at first, when he was doing his investigation, he was trying to figure out, you know, who did the crime, right? Well, it changed from who did the crime to was the crime really committed, because the evidence that he gained through the information that he started with from the lady at the museum made him realize that, well, wait a minute, maybe, just maybe, JFK was not murdered or was not assassinated. So he, with that thought in mind, he started doing his investigation. And sure enough, everything that he looked at with that thought in mind proved to him conclusively that actually JFK was not murdered. He was not assassinated. He was shot once in the shoulder, he said, but he was not shot through the neck. He was not shot in the back or the head. None of that happened. It was all fake. Okay. So the reason I bring that up is because our, the people who are involved with the globalists and all that, you know, if they can create a circumstance where they don't have to break a law, you know, nobody could ever come to them and charge them with any kind of crime. That is, if they can get the same results from not creating, from not committing the crime that they get for, if they did commit the crime. Okay. And if JFK was not assassinated, they got the same results, exactly the same results. Everybody thought that JFK, I guarantee you, there's not one person probably on the street today that does not think or believe sincerely that it was a true assassination. Okay. Of course, I'm not going to go into all the details that this guy goes into, because people will have to go over and listen to it for themselves.
Do you?
And if you want to look for it, it's called MyGodI'mHit.com. If you want to go listen to a video where this guy talks about his investigation, just go to that website. MyGodI'mHit.
I've given you a chance to, you know, say your piece here, but I want to observe you began with a statement of profound skepticism about not believing anything you hear, and also even not just not believing half of what you don't see, but not believing anything you see. And then you come out and lay out this complete hokum theory about JFK. And how in God's name can you believe nonsense like that when you're supposed to be such a profound skeptic that you don't believe anything you hear or anything you see? But you bought this hook, line, and sinker, and I'll tell you what you bought into, and I know very well, is crackpot, completely crackpot. So I'm very puzzled. This is a very strange case. You must not know a lot about who I am or what I've done in terms of JFK research, because I have brought together the best experts in the world to take apart what did and didn't happen. We cracked the cover up and exposed who really did it. I published 3 books that were just sensational in 1998, 2000, 2003. I've subsequently published a 4th volume. In all these cases, I bring together the best experts. And what you're describing here is just nonsense. So I want to invite you to go ahead and defend your point of view, because believe me, this is very peculiar.
Well, the reason, the reason I just used that as an example, actually. But I did look at, if you want to look at the evidence, okay, the evidence is pretty clear. I mean, if you look at that, you see pictures of people, you see all kinds of stuff that he brings forward, and he makes it all available to you if you want, you know, to, you know, have copies of it or whatever. And, but the point I'm making is, and we're talking about, you know, you were talking about, the thing that's going on in Ukraine and Russia and all that stuff. Believe me, the globalists are all involved in that. And they're going to tell you what they want you to hear, what they want you to see or whatever, read or whatever. And they're not going to tell you the way it really is. And their medias are all in bed with them, you know, and so they're going to tell you whatever they want you to hear and what they want you to see, because they play that silly game, and they have to, I guess, of, you know, creating a crisis, controlling the crisis to a predetermined goal. They play that game over and over and over and over, and they have, I guess, throughout history done the same thing, and it works. So they don't change it. If it works, you know, why change it? And the people today are so gullible, so brain dead and so blind, I suppose, that they just kind of fall in line, kind of like a bunch of lemmings, with everything that anybody tells them or shows them or whatever, you know. And that's why they're able to get by with what they're able to get by with. So how do we know, really, what's really going on in truth, unless we've been there and seen it with our own eyes and witnessed it happening before us? How do we know what really is going on with Ukraine and Russia? We don't. All we're getting is reports, and we don't know whether the reports are honest. Honestly reported, we don't know. See,
you're a very odd case to me, because you're declaring your belief in a completely fantastic story about one of the major events in American political history for which there has been voluminous research, and saying we can't know what happened about anything, but you're giving me a cock and bull story about JFK. we sort these things out the way we do with every other. We try to sort out all the information, figure out what's plausible, what's not, what makes sense, what doesn't. It's really an application of what I was describing before as abductive reasoning. Which hypothesis, if it were true, would make the most sense out of what's going on here? I'll tell you, what makes the most sense is that Russia is acting on principle in defense of the national security of Russia. Vladimir Putin is a principled man acting honorably, laying out his reasons, yeah, as he did in a masterful speech that he presented on the 24th of February, which I published on my blog. The United States, yep, is acting in a scurrilous fashion. We're violating international law. We're making ourselves co-belligerents. We are running the risk of the nation being annihilated in a nuclear war for which Congress, right, is not even willing to take a stand and a vote. So, you know. We all understand that no empirical knowledge, no knowledge of what goes on in the world is known for certain. We all know that. It's all uncertain. I even gave the example of classical Newtonian physics, which 200 years was held to be the very paradigm, the exemplar of scientific knowledge, which turned out to be a special case of a more general relativity theory. So, I mean, if all of science can believe that this is, a bastion of certainty, I mean, with some technical qualification, but certainly no physicist for 200 years ever thought that Newton would be overthrown, it turns out that it's a special limiting case. We get a whole new conception of the universe out of Einstein, which is the way in which science proceeds. But for your to come on, you know, and give us this massive skeptical stance, why would you believe anything about JFK's assassination if you don't believe anything you hear or anything you read? And then you go on to elaborate what is, unquestionably, what you are citing here is malarkey. It's just malarkey. I'm being as polite as I can be, okay? I can't tell you how much research I've done on JFK with the best experts. Go ahead.
My question about the case, my question about the JFK case, you know, there hasn't been not one person ever charged with anything, you know, other than the patsy, okay, was never charged with the assassination. And, you know, nothing was uncovered about it, but yet there's a lot of people that knows a lot about what went on. I mean, we know that. So,
let me just contribute to your background of alternative views. Check out, go to my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, and go to 18 November, a JFK special report, which I dedicated to Oliver Stone. Take a look at what I have there, and then get back.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. You've had a huge chunk of time here, and I got two other callers standing by and only five minutes to deal with them. So, okay, let's leave it at that. I check it out. Go to BitChute channel Jim Fetzer, my special report about JFK dedicated to Oliver Stone. You should be able to track it down. Meanwhile, we have Ken from Michigan. Yeah, thanks for calling. Ken from Michigan.
Yeah,
Ken,
no problem.
Thank you.
Hi,
Ken.
Hi, Dr. Jim. Appreciate your show very much. Yeah, it's just a tragedy what happened to the Kennedy family. I just want to know if you know anything about the John Kennedy's plane going down. Was that was probably a sabotage too, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I've got more than one story about it. I think Hillary may have had to do with it, or W, because his father, of course, was involved in the assassination of JFK. George H.W. Bush was actually in the Dal Tech supervising an anti-Castro Cuban who fired three shots with a Mannlicher Carcano, the only unsilent shots fired in the plaza that day. And he got his Kennedy. So there's some suggestion that W had a role. I think the more probable is Hillary. Hillary wanted to become the senator from New York as a springboard for her presidential career, and that, JFK Jr. stood in the way, he would have been overwhelmingly elected. Hillary had to get him out of the way. There were explosives that were planted in the plane. It appears in a, I think it's Buttonville Airport outside of Toronto, where Jr. had been lured up there by a bigwig who claimed he wanted to help finance his research into the death of his father, but where I believe he gave us the signal by naming his magazine George for George H.W. Bush, the real power behind it, by the way. George H.W. Bush was merely on the scene as a coordinator where Edward Lansdale, appears to have positioned the shooters and determined the sequence of shots. But the real brains behind it was Lyndon Baines Johnson. And Hoover, you know, assisted him in the cover-up. He made Hoover, the FBI, the sole investigative agency. There was actually even going to be, he had sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination. It was a matter of considerable urgency for Lyndon. There was to be a vote that very date, 22 November 1963, in the United States Senate about Bobby Baker, who was Lyndon's bag man, that was widely expected to so tarnish his reputation, Jack couldn't run with him again. Jack had already confided in his secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, he was not going to run with Lyndon again and was thinking of Terry Sanford, the governor from North Carolina. Ken, is that enough for the moment?
Thanks very much. Yes.
Yeah, great. I'm real glad you called. Paul's standing by. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, this won't take long, and I realize I don't have much time, but I will remind you, Jim, and I don't know if you remember, but Mer Bailey called in many months ago on this topic, and she mentioned that site, My God, I'm Hit, which I went to that day, I believe, or later that day or evening, and I read it all. And there's something to it. I'll just remind you, just in passing, okay, because there's no time. But people have called you a crackpot. People have called you, said your stuff is bunk and hokum and malarkey. These are ad hominem attacks. So I would just remind you gently, if I can, that, there's things that are sometimes worth listening to. Miles Mathis came to the same conclusion. I don't agree with everything in his paper, but when you read Miles Mathis' paper on JFK in its entirety, there are quite compelling things in there, including a lot of photographic anomalies, and it's you yourself have pointed out how so many things are fake. The autopsy is fake, right?
They had to fabricate the evidence to create a phony case against Oswald. Paul, thank you for calling, and thank you, Ken. Thanks for our first caller. Thank you all. I appreciate you all.
See, thank you, Ken.
Back on.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.